Your Steve Jones Show podcast audio is loading. Steve Jones Show podcast, sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Agency, Mount Pleasant Mills in Northumberland, and online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, Northumberland. Price and service important to you? You bet it is. Homeowners, life, auto, business insurance, Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. I'm in the beautiful, spacious, incredible Sunbury Motor Studio. Made possible by Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Humbles Wharf. By the way, the 2014s are in, and they are spectacular. We'll talk about the Steelers this half hour.
Yay.
Captain Depression gets to sit back and listen for a while.
Did you watch that last night? Did you watch the game last night?
It's just a thrill for me. I'm Steve Jones, joined today by Debbie Downer. Gloomy Gus, whatever you want to go with. I mean, honestly, Neil Coulong is with BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. He's a blogger. Neil, welcome. So I'm going to ask you what Kevin would ask. What are the pros and cons from last night's game?
We'll start with the cons. I think there were probably a few more of those than the pros in this one. Overall, my impression walking away from that game was really I didn't feel Ben Roethlisberger played particularly well. I thought the interception they threw at the end was really it was probably more a condition of laziness than anything else. I mean, he didn't step into it. It floated on him. He threw a couple of those throughout the game. He missed open receivers. And I get that people are going to call for the heads of anyone associated with the Steelers' offensive line, and the receiving corps probably didn't help him out a whole lot last night either. But at the same time, he's the big money guy. He's the franchise quarterback. He wants the game on his shoulders, and it was. And again, he let the team down. I mean, he made a mistake at the end, and frankly, that's becoming a little bit more of a recurring theme as he gets into the later years of his career. So the concerns that we knew going into the game, I think, still are concerns. But now you have to start wondering about Roethlisberger. Everyone wants to say it's the issue with the offensive line, but I thought pass protection was pretty good, all things considered, last night. That's a very good pass rushing team. I thought he had time to make throws and he didn't do it.
There are a couple times I've kind of felt like he's changed how he throws the ball because of the protection. Your thoughts on that? Is that possible?
Yeah, it certainly is. I could see that being an issue, but and you've still got the same problem, in my opinion. If he's altering his throw because basically he's got shell shock due to the pass rush, you have to kind of look at that as we're not going to get better if that's the case. I mean, what will it take? Anthony Munoz and his four buddies aren't going to come out there and protect for him next week, so he's going to have to find a way to kind of get past that and figure out a way to make passes on the field. And I don't feel that he did that at the level that he was needing to. I thought he could have been a lot better. I mean, was that going to be enough for them to win the game? I'm not exactly sure. But it more certainly needs to be done. And the offense through two games, as Mike Tomlin just said in his press conference, has not been good enough. So top to bottom, I think a lot of them need to look at themselves in the mirror and figure out what they're going to do.
Now, what were the pros out of last night's game?
The pros, I would start with the pass protection. I thought they gave Roethlisberger time. They put him in a good spot, and certainly if you compare it to week one, I thought they came a long way. Fernando Velasco played a pretty good game, all things considered. He was taking snaps in jeans on Monday. He hadn't even been on a football field for 2 weeks. All of that considered, I thought he did pretty well. I didn't think Marcus Gilbert played a particularly good game, but between Ramon Foster and David DeCastro, I thought they did a good job handling Geno Atkins, who's one of the best interior defensive linemen in the game, if not the best. Those things definitely stood out. Special teams, for what that's worth, I thought Jarvis Jones, the rookie outside linebacker, made his impact there. Shamarco Thomas made a couple hits on that as well. And they battled well in the battle for field position, which is something they did not do against Tennessee. Zoltan Mesko punted very well. I think his average punt was like 46 yards or something like that, and he was certainly out there often enough. So, one misstep by him could have made the game a lot worse. And overall, that was a plus. There probably weren't a whole lot, but I definitely don't think the game was as bad as the week one game was. So maybe it's a step in the right direction. Maybe they're able to put all three phases together next week against Chicago.
Well, that's the problem. The schedule is not kind to them in terms of how it plays out. They start out with Tennessee, didn't get that one. You know Cincinnati's going to be better than Tennessee. They were. Now you have Chicago. I mean, this is not the kind of schedule that allows you to get better.
The worst part of it is, I think, it's their third consecutive team going up against a very good defensive line. So this offensive line is young and inexperienced as it is, having to move parts around with the injury of Maurkice Pouncey and going up against another highly active, highly productive defensive front. And I thought Chicago's defensive line looked great against Minnesota. They did a very good job in that game, and we can expect to see a lot of the same stuff Sunday night when the Steelers take them. I mean, they're going to come over that A gap the way that Cincinnati did plenty often last night. And you kind of hope to go by the mantra, iron sharpens iron, and you hope that they can get better by going up against a very good front defensive force the way that they have. But yeah, I mean, they're certainly not going to be favored against the Bears. That's a tough game to win, even if you are at home in primetime. That's a good football team. And, I haven't had a chance to really break them down outside of, watching the game. A couple of buddies of mine on Sunday. But they look like they're a pretty good team. They're gutty, they're resilient, and plenty of chances to lose that game against the Vikings. They were able to pull it out. So, yeah, it definitely does not get any easier for them. And Minnesota isn't a terrible team either for the week after that before their bye. So, I don't know. I mean, we're kind of inching into historic times here. The Steelers don't typically start off seasons like this, but you honestly can't sit here and expect them to beat the Bears, even if they are playing at home, on Sunday night. It's not going to be easy for them, and they got a lot to do if they want to avoid going 0-3.
No question about that. The next part of this, Neil, is last night Derek Moy had his first career catch. It was a touchdown. Height made, height, what Derek does made the difference as to how they want to play it. How does Moy fit in? What can he do to help? What's allowed him to make this team?
I think we saw it last night. It is that height advantage, and it's the fact that what I really like about him is how technical he is. I mean, you look at him running, he doesn't look like the most fluid athlete on earth. But from what I see, he has outstanding body control. He has good hands. And that's a big part of the reason why they went, first play, a fade to him right away. I mean, it looked like Leon Hall didn't even think that they were going to throw it to him. And it was a nice pass, and it was a great catch. I mean, we had a picture up on the site. He's staring right at the ball. It's coming into his hand. And those throws over their shoulder, especially when a defensive back is going to be on him the way Hall was, at least, down at his waist for as short as Leon Hall is, I thought he did a great job just concentrating, looking the ball in, considering that's, his second game, and that's his first catch and first NFL touchdown. I thought he looked like he's done it 50 times before, and perhaps he has throughout his career, but certainly never at Paul Brown Stadium on Monday Night Football. I was really happy for him. I mean, everyone has great things to say about him, and you look at it now like, hey, you know what? This guy could be an emerging option within this offense. He's a good red zone threat. Certainly, I don't think Jericho Cotchery played well enough last night to say that he's without question going to be the third receiver on the field. They could have a weapon with Moy. They really could use him more often, certainly in the absence of Heath Miller within that red zone. But get Miller back on the field, put both of them out there, see what they can do.
For you, Neil, you get into the .com part of it, blog, so forth. How'd you get into that part of it?
Well, I was a journalist throughout college. I worked for a daily newspaper. I was a sports editor of a daily paper in Iowa for a couple of years after college, and then realized I didn't really like getting up at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to work at 3 until 4 in the morning and cover high school sports. So I got out of it. Just wanted to get kind of a regular job. And at that point, it's not too incredibly long ago. I don't want to date myself that much, but at that point, the internet was really exploding with blogs, with online journalism, and I just kind of went from one site to another and found a great home with SB Nation, and, you know, I was writing for them just kind of casually. And after a bit, they asked me to be the editor, and here I am. I mean, it really is just kind of a, you know, I don't like to say that I treat it like a hobby. I mean, I take it seriously, but I do it for fun, and I enjoy doing what I'm doing. And I like to think we put out a pretty good product. So, you know, I keep doing it, and, you know, the readers keep wanting it. So as long as we have a viable product to put out there, and I don't know, 0-11, if we'll get the same numbers we're getting now. But it's working out pretty well.
Neil, it's an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us today from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Neil, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong with us. Well,
no, I think he's right on every point. I thought Ben did not look good at all. As a matter of fact, I thought he looked borderline awful. I mean, he was making bad throws, throwing behind receivers, throwing over receivers. I wasn't 100% sure if it was running wrong routes or just bad passes, but I think it might have been a combination of both last night.
Wow, you are the gloomy Gus of all gloomy Gus.
Steve, this is a football team that hasn't won a game in, I think you'd have to go back to what, week 13 or 14 of last year. And that includes the preseason. There's not much to be excited about right now.
Your voice is getting high.
What's that mean?
You're getting a tad excited.
You think? Listen, the Steelers owe me 6 hours of my life back for watching the last two games. I stayed up until midnight last night thinking maybe, just maybe, there was... Oh, wait, forget it. There's no hope.
They owe you 6 hours of your life?
They owe me 6 hours of my life back. 3 hours for this week, 3 hours for last week.
You know, you can do something else.
Well, listen, we're getting closer and closer to that day. You know how much I love football. Do you know how much watching this team is physically painful for me?
Well, explain to the audience how physically painful it is for you.
It hurts, okay? I actually get headaches from watching and trying to hold back screaming at the television for the mediocrity that is Steeler football right now. And mediocrity might be a compliment.
Wow, you're kind of a Gus.
Well, listen, unless you could find something to be cheery about right now, I'll tell you, and you both said it, you and Neil both said it, the schedule does not lend itself to any sort of turnaround.
No, it does not. It does not.
I mean, you have the Bears on Sunday night, and you follow that up with a game in London so you can get embarrassed in a different country with the Vikings.
You're just a Gus.
It's not that. I mean, there wasn't even 50%. Was there a 50% completion for the Bengals through the entire game? Did they hit 50% completion percentage?
I doubt it.
I think it was 250 yards and under 50% completions. And you still lose. I mean, there were more three and outs, I think, in that game than I've ever seen in a Steeler football game.
Yeah.
At one point of the beginning of the third quarter, especially, I started watching the season finale of Under the Dome.
Was it good?
It was great. It was better than the football game. Thank heaven for DVRs.
What could bring you back?
The bye week is the only, because I think at the bye week, that's when you get Heath Miller back. That's when you get Le'Veon Bell back, where maybe, just maybe, there might be a running game. And Ben would have, you know, a tight end that can actually hold on to the football. That was a killer, by the way. The tight end dropping the football. Was he a second year kid from Oregon? That was a killer. Getting that ball, losing that fumble on a big big drive there early in the ball game.
Wow. We're going to let Kevin cool down for a moment. Remind everyone that Travis Sochik from the Pittsburgh Trivium Review is going to be on to talk about the Pirates next half hour.
The one team in Pittsburgh that is winning.
We'll continue with our on-air therapy session in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance. Homeowners, life, auto, business insurance. If price and service are important to you, Mount Pleasant Mills, Northumberland. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, SEL, $11,995. 2006 Pontiac Solstice two-door convertible, super low miles, only $15,521. A one-owner 2011 Hyundai Sonata 2.4-liter hybrid for just $17,387. 2012 Ford Econoline cargo van, fully serviced, $18,996. 2010 Ford Explorer Sport Track 4-door, $24,352. And a 2011 Lincoln MKX with a 6-year, 100,000-mile warranty, just $34,882. Call 888-536-8017.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24-7 at sunburymotors.com. At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Shopping for insurance to save money is not an easy thing. What if I told you there's good news for Pennsylvania residents searching to save money on homeowners, auto insurance, RVs, motorcycles, and more? What if I told you you didn't have to sacrifice local personal service? Then call or visit online the Kratzer Insurance Agency in Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland, serving the area now for 50 years.
Hi, this is Kim Ebright. We are proud to offer Safeco Insurance at a very competitive rate. Some customers have saved as much as 50% off their premium.
Safeco has been around since 1923 and in 2008 became part of the Liberty Mutual Insurance, a name well known and trusted in the insurance industry. Start saving and be safe with Safeco and Kratzer Insurance.
Standing together against whatever. Family, friendship, security.
The Kratzer Insurance Agency.
Sunday night, Carrie Underwood.
I got a new song for her, though.
Carrie Underwood singing the theme as Kevin gets ready for Sunday night.
Let's see. I think it should be been waiting for a butt kick in Sunday night. 0-3 is now in sight. The Steelers owe us a great big fright. Please don't have us play on Sunday night.
Wow.
That should be the new lyrics for this week's game.
You are really one bitter dude. I mean, you're talking about multiple years of success. You know how much Roger would give to have the Redskins be as successful over the long term the way the Steelers have been?
But it's expected now, and mediocrity is not acceptable. Actually, I'd be happy if this team was mediocre.
Wow, you are one bitter dude.
Look at the schedule. Tell me right now how many games you see the Steelers winning, playing the way they have in the first 2 weeks of the first 2 weeks of the regular season.
Maybe did I say Cleveland. What did I say when the season began? What did I say?
I think you're optimistic at what, 7-9?
I said they're an 8-8 football team that if they don't hit it right, they're going to be 6-10, and if they hit it right in a couple of games, they're going to end up being 10-6. So that's what they are. I said they're potentially a 6-10 team.
You are optimistic.
Now, when you get Le'Veon Bell back, it might change what you have.
Well, it can't hurt.
But yeah, you know, I'm just saying it might. I don't know if it will. I really don't know if it will. But the difference is I have no emotional investment in this. None.
I mean, the defense did not play poorly, but you can't have them on the field almost three times what your offense is.
I understand that. But again, the problem with the Steeler defense is this. There actually is a problem with the Steeler defense. They're not a game-changing defense. They have not been a game-changing defense for 2 years now. That is an issue, to be frank with you.
Well, does that go to a new offensive coordinator? I mean, is that the new offense? Is that where the problem is?
I don't quite get what you're saying. Well, I said the Steelers are not a game-changing defense, I said.
Oh, defense. I'm sorry. I thought you said offense. Okay.
All right. You're confusing the passengers.
Well, I don't have a problem with the defense. The defense has played okay. Yeah. I mean,
but they're not a game-changing defense.
No.
They have not been a game-changing defense for 2 years. Statistically, they led the National Football League last year, statistically, in pass and rush defense and total defense. Statistically, number one. But here's the problem. They also were so far down the list on creating turnovers, they were not giving the offense the ball where they changed the tone of the game. This defense has a lot more onus put on it now because if the offense is going to struggle, then you have to have a defense that changes. If they're as good as they claim to be defensively, they need to then be game changers where suddenly they create a takeaway, give the offense a short field. They have to do some things defensively that instead of statistically being stingy numerically, have to change the game with how they play it. All right, news bottom of the hour. Then we're going to talk about something positive in Pittsburgh. That's Travis Sawchuk from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review about the Pirates. Sarah Bartlett next, bottom of the hour. Then Travis will be in, and then we'll close out with the rant of the day from Gigi. That's your new nickname, Gigi.
Gigi?
Gloomy Gus.
Gloomy Gus.
You're on News Radio, 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Jason asked a question that Bill has his hurry-up offense. He calls NASCAR. He wanted to know if Penn State's offense in 2005 had a nickname. It was nicknamed Spread HD.
That's right.
Yeah, I know it is. That's why I said it. You hate my guts, don't you?
There are days. Yeah, I couldn't remember it, but I remembered it had something to do with TV.
Yeah, it was Spread HD. So that's what they called it. A little high-def feel to it, you know? So, you okay there? I mean, I'm a little worried about you. I mean, you know, I'm a little worried. We've kind of gone through this little therapy session with you, and you seem angrier than when we started. Is it? You know, and I really have felt like, and I think the audience agrees with me, I think my tone of questioning about this has been very gentle.
I was leaning toward antagonizing, but, you know, I'm gentle. Okay, if you want to call it that.
Well, these are very
gentle. Trying to spark something.
No, I'm not trying to do that at all. I'm trying to calm you. So what we'll do is we'll shift gears and go to baseball and bring in Travis Sawchuk from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, who shows up in his first season on the beat, and the Pirates get rid of 20 years of anguish. So he really is the good luck charm at PNC Park. In fact, I think just having him on the show means I think we're going to get renewed now just by having you, Trav.
Well, I hope it's not up to me, but hey, I'll take full credit if you're offering it. Sure.
Good, I like it. Take all the credit you want. That means we're still working, okay. And, you know, and we can give you all the credit for it. Well, as this has played out, and you've watched this from its infancy all the way to this point, what have been some common threads that have impressed you about what you've seen this summer?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's kind of flown under the radar, and I wrote about this Sunday, is just the kind of the overall, the sense of philosophy and approach to run prevention that the Pirates have employed this year, looking at everything from the shifting, which they've done at a club record rate, the improved, if you look at every pitcher on the staff almost, they almost all have career high rates of inducing ground balls, and that's a product of career high rates of throwing sinking fastballs. And this has all been a cohesive, comprehensive effort, and it's made the sum of the defense play better than the individual parts. And it's not like they went out and added a bunch of Gold Glove infielders and pricey starting pitchers. They've really internally made the defense better just by taking a cutting-edge approach to defensive philosophy. And I think that's, you know, we look at the starting pitchers, a lot of them are having career years, and I think some of that, maybe a significant part, traces back to this defensive philosophy they employed.
In fact, I thought that was really on display in the St. Louis series when they took on the Cardinals at Busch Stadium, and late in the game when Matt Adams pinch hit in that game, Clint Hurdle took Neil Walker on the right side and pushed him back several feet. Then he climbed the ladder and made the play. To me, that's
I remember that. That's line drive. You think of the classic base hit to right field, and there's Neil Walker climbing the ladder to rob a hit from Matt Adams, and that's a great, you know, that's just one instance of what they've employed this year.
And I think that's something that, you know, when you look at what they've done this year, I mean, that to me, that's a classic case of you manage the game and you think of the situation, and that, you know, that bail, Adams, that hit drops in, the game's over. I mean, at that point, they might as well get the Philsburg Osceola kid in here.
And the cool thing about it is everyone in the organ, almost everyone's been involved in it, from, you know, the analytics department, the front office, the general manager, to a 20th century kind of old school coaching staff that had to buy into new concepts, to the players had to buy in and execute, pitchers had to execute. And it started at the minor league level back in 2009 when the minor league players and coaches became kind of guinea pigs to see, could this really make us better? So,
and Travis, I watched that because there's certain things that they do with positioning that we saw here with the State College Spikes at this level. Of course, they're in Jamestown now, but for 6 years they were part of the Pirates organization. Positioning, especially in the infield, what they did in the outfield, you could see that there are certain things that they were trying to do that scientifically would try to match up with the swing of the guy at the plate.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you saw it at that kind of grassroots level. And, you know, I just started thinking about this story because so many guys were having either rebound seasons or career best seasons, from, you know, A.J. Burnett, since he's come to Pittsburgh, to Liriano, you know, even Charlie Morton, Jeff Locke, the first half of the season. It's like, hey, what's going on here? There's got to be something more than the coincidence. And I think this defensive approach, to me, I mean, it's just one part of the season, but I think it's a significant part, and it's the most kind of comprehensive thing that's touched almost everyone in the organization. I just think it's a cool story. And but, you know, it still boils down to players' execution, and pitchers still have to execute the pitch, hit location, fielders still have to catch and throw. And it's not just about that velocity, but I think it's one cool part of what's been a really amazing story throughout the whole season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. What do you think Morneau, Bird, you know, and of course Buck's a part of this too, but what, you watch them all the time, Travis, what have they meant to changing the dynamic of what the Pirates are now compared to what the Pirates were in July?
Yeah, I think, you know, two really important additions at pretty low cost. And I think what Bird and Morneau do more than anything is extend the lineup with guys who are professional hitters, they're not going to get at bats away. And, you know, Pedro Alvarez brings great power to the field, but too often it's a quick strikeout. His outs often don't move runners over. Hasn't had a lot of sacrifice flies, that sort of thing. And I think Bird and Morneau will not give as many bats away in the middle of the lineup. When you have some, because there's guys on base, Andrew McCutchen is a high on base guy. Neil Walker against right hand pitchers is a high on base guy. So there's opportunities to drive and run in the middle lineup. And they have two guys who are better suited to do that. I mean, you know, especially Bird. I know Morneau had a big RBI hit the other day, but Bird's been really impressive since he's come over. He's had a lot of solid contact. He's driven the ball, and he just seems locked in up there that he is going to compete every pitch, and he has a sound approach, and he executes. And that's the kind of guy they needed to really give them a chance to do something down the stretch.
Yeah, no question about that. It's done that. Gabby Sanchez is not bad defensively, but is Morneau, because he is a natural first baseman, been an upgrade there?
I think so. I mean, I don't think Sanchez was horrible, and I don't think Morneau is going to bring home a gold glove or anything this season, but I think he's a slight upgrade there. And I know Clint Hurdle really likes, even against left-handed pitching, Hurdle wants to have Morneau in lineup. He really likes what he calls his Morneau's toolbox. So he brings a lot to it, not just defensively, but experience, the bat. I mean, to get him for Alex Presley, I think the Pirates were going to jump all over that, and they were smart to not overpay at the trade deadline. There was some risk involved in that, but they didn't overpay, and they let the market price come back to them. And these could be really, when you look back at the season, these might be two really signature moves when it's all said and done.
They still have six with Cincinnati. St. Louis is done with the Pirates and Cincinnati. They're done. So the schedule plays to their favor. Six with Cincinnati, possibility the door is open to still maybe seeing them in a one-game playoff. Your thoughts on the stretch schedule now that the Cubs are behind them?
Yeah, I think it really, when you look at the three teams in the race, Cardinals, as you mentioned, really have the most favorable schedule, and that's been the case since last week. So it's going to be really interesting. Pirates were at six meetings. They could be decisive games here. It's going to be really fun the last three games here to see how that plays out. But the Cardinals definitely have the edge in the division just because of the schedule. You know, Reds started September really hot. Pirates have hung in there. So it's been a long time since Pittsburgh's seen meaningful September baseball. And the last few weeks should be a lot of fun. And, you know, Pirates-Reds, they're going to be competing for maybe the division or at least a home field spot in the wild card game, which is a huge deal with everything that goes into that, too. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
It also would be interesting to see how they set up the pitching for this. Now, you set up the pitching, obviously, one way if you're going to play in a short series, you know, best out of seven.
Sure.
But there's also, how do you deal with a one-game playoff? Has there been any talk about how this sets up in a one-game playoff? Have you looked that far out, whose, quote, turn it would be on that day if it was the one-gamer?
Yeah, in a vacuum, I think they would want Liriano to match up with both the Reds and the Cardinals. You know, think about those left-handed bats the Reds have, and Votto and Jay Bruce and Sinsu Chu to lead the lineup. So I think they'd want Liriano against the Reds, and they would want him against the Cardinals because he's 3-0 with a 2.2, I think, ERA against the Cardinals. So in a vacuum, they would set it up that way. Now, I'm trying to think. I don't think I've actually looked ahead yet and see who would be available that day. But if they had their choice, if they're able to, I think they would want Liriano pitching in either the playing game or the first game in the series against one of those two teams.
Has Gerrit Cole made things more interesting in terms of if they get to a short series, about the possibility of saying, you know what, the kid's been really good, what do they do with him?
Sure. I mean, I think a couple of weeks ago, everybody thought he was headed to a bullpen role in October. And then, you know, you saw what he did in Texas. We saw what he did on Saturday here in Pittsburgh. And all of a sudden, he looks like one of the top two options in the rotation. And it's interesting because this is a guy who's never thrown more than, you know, through 150 innings across all levels last year. He's at 173 and a third right now. But he's showing signs of fatigue. If anything, he's getting better. He has a 1.3 ERA. He's got 9.5 strikeouts per nine innings in September. And he's been their best pitcher since September 1. So I think going forward, he is definitely one of their top four options if they're in a postseason series. And we would see him start a postseason game if the Pirates advanced into a series format in October.
What did you think of the Darvish-Cole matchup and how that played out in Arlington, especially considering they had just come off the St. Louis series, which had not been exactly a shining moment of 2013?
Yeah, no, that was it was just a lot of fun to watch as a baseball fan. But two, I thought it showed you something about, there's got to be a lot of components that there's in being an ace pitcher, and you got to have the velocity, location, breaking stuff, but you also have to have that mound presence and that confidence. And I think Cole has shown he's not afraid of the moment. He wants the ball. We saw that in his debut when he matched up with Tim Lincecum and the Giants, and he looked like the coolest, most collected guy on the field. And then against Darvish, when the Pirates really needed a win, this is not a guy who is afraid of that moment, even as a rookie pitcher in a pennant race. So I think you like his moxie, you like his mound presence, you like the confidence, in addition to the stuff. And it's the breaking ball that's gotten better as the season's gone on and really allowed him to reach another level here in September.
When a team is really good, everyone wants more opportunities to be around them, more national media, so forth. Has that made your job a little more difficult compared to maybe a little cozier atmosphere dealing with guys as compared to having so many other people around that also want to be a part and see this story play out?
Sure. I mean, the clubhouse has become a little more crowded, especially in the second half. I think a lot of the stories that we wrote locally first half of the season are now getting played up more by the national media, so there's been some recycling, I think, which usually happens with most good team stories or individual stories. But, you know, I came from the world of college football, so access is much better at the major league level than it was at the college football level. So, you know, you can get guys one-on-one if you wait them out, that sort of thing. So as long as you have patience, I still think you can do your job well as a beat writer. You just have to be a little more patient when the story becomes as compelling as the Pirates has.
Is it a good group to cover? Is this a group where you sit back and go, you know what? These are pretty good guys to be around. Or are there moments where you're like, eh, okay, off to the mine?
I think it's like almost any office setting. There's really good people you like to associate with. There's some people maybe you don't as much and you avoid them maybe to a degree. But I think for the most part, the Pirates have been pretty open and they've been really good to work with for the most part. So. Yeah, I've enjoyed covering the season. This is my first year in a Major League Baseball, Pete. So I don't have a lot of experiences to measure it against. But I found the group to be pretty good to work with so far.
Which you covered college football before? What are the?
That's right. Yeah, I was covering Clemson football before I took this job.
Dabo Swinney.
So, I'll take credit for breaking a 20-year ACC losing or non-title streak, and now breaking. 20-year losing streak.
No, I mean, the bottom line is you've become the man. No, seriously, you've become the man. I mean, everybody, that's why we wanted you on the show, because we think now we're going to get renewed.
Yeah. Going to Vegas? Hey, come talk to me or something. I don't know.
Absolutely.
There's some magic going on.
What was it like covering that team? Because, I mean, in South Carolina and Clemson own the state. What was it like covering that versus now covering a professional team?
Yeah, it was. They're definitely different animals. And a college, as you know, a college football game day, there's nothing quite like it. It's an event.
No.
For baseball, something you kind of just live with every day is more like a lifestyle kind of thing. But they're completely different. They're both a lot of fun. I think the access is better at the Major League Baseball level. I think, in general, college football coaches have been more controlling of the message and trying to make it one voice. Nick Saban would be the model of that. So, they're both a lot of fun, but I'm more of a baseball guy at heart, and I like the access here. So it's been a good change for me, and I've enjoyed it.
Has there been a part of you that said, wow, that this franchise lost 20 consecutive years? I can't believe how lucky I am.
Yeah, I mean, I was aware of the Pirates' recent history. But, I also don't believe that just because you've lost 20 straight seasons, you're going to have 20 straight additional losing seasons. And I like this, just looking at the system, I thought they had a chance to be relevant in the near future. I didn't expect them to have this kind of season. I don't think anyone did. But I did think the Pirates were going to end that streak in the not-too-distant future, and they had some reason to be excited when you look at the Coles, the Taillon, the Polanco's, the Hansons, all of those guys. So. Not a really strong draft this year. I mean, I don't think the Pirates are a one-year story. I think they're going to be competitive for quite a while.
No, I agree with. I absolutely agree with that assessment. There's no question in my mind. I think this is not an aberration. This is actually the start of a long-term deal. Travis, thanks so much for the time. You do a great job. Enjoy reading your stuff in the Trib.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Travis Sawchuk from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, Northumberland. Price and service mean something to you, mean something to everybody.
Auto, home, business, life insurance, Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, Northumberland. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Great people at Sunbury Motors with the 14s now in the lots. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. We'll come back and close it out with Double G in a moment. What does Double G stand for, Kev?
Great guy.
Unfortunately, gloomy Gus here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Thanks for the memory of sentimental verse. Nothing in my purse.
Because that's all I have left.
Of course, you picked the former part owner of the Cleveland Indians to sing that instead of Bing Crosby, the former part owner of the Pirates.
Oh, come on. Like, Bing, who would have been known more for that song? I mean, let's be serious here. Bob Hope would be known for that song more than anybody else.
Former part owner of the Cleveland Indians. All right, so we move forward here, and you hate the fact that I know that.
Yeah, I just didn't matter.
No, the Nationals won today, by the way. They beat Atlanta 6-5 in the makeup from last night's game that had to be postponed because of the tragedy in D.C. yesterday, the incredible, unspeakable tragedy. They did play today. They won 6-5. They'll play the regularly scheduled game at 7:05 tonight. Bo Pelini says that Husker fans will forgive. He said, "I'm human like anyone else."
I actually have that piece of audio.
I think that I've built up enough points with our fans over the last 5 years in how I've conducted myself, how I've run this program, and what we've done with this program over the last 5 years to earn some forgiveness for something that, like I said, was made in a private setting.
The recording captures Pelini's comments that are critical of two Omaha sports writers and Nebraska fans. And he was shocked by the release of the audio. Of course he is. It was 2 years ago. It was provided by a tipster who, according to Deadspin, was upset with Nebraska's performance in Saturday's home loss. I mean...
All right, I haven't released anything about the Steelers, and I've been unhappy about their last two games.
Six and ten might be optimistic.
I agree.
And your reaction to... I'm trying to think what's more entertaining, how they play or your reaction to it.